are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in Coco, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and all over God's magnificent planet where there's internet.
Amen. And pretty soon with Artemis, there will be no places that we will not have internet.
That's right. We
that
can do this
everywhere.
On the moon.
That's right.
You mean on the moon?
We could. But right now, you can tune into 1510wwbc.com and you can hit that listen live button and hear us live from any device that you may have. Or if you'd like to catch the show later, all of our 14 years have been posted on that website. You just have to go by the date. You can click that on-demand button and hear all of our replays or download them, which download them into an MP4. And with 52 weeks of shows, two guests a show,
we have
times
a whole lot of shows.
Years, we got a whole
like
lot of
Like they say, we have
there.
A hell of a lot of shows.
A hell of a. Hell
yeah.
Hell of a.
So,
but it's great to be with you, Seats.
Thank
Happy
you.
Happy Monday.
Thank you. Thank you. So on Mondays, my co-host Ellen O'Neill and myself, as well as our resident guest, Ali Tambor,
hello.
We sit here and we speak about issues that's affecting our communities, our state, our country, the good old USA, the world, and we just chat. It's like sitting with friends, having coffee, but not really having coffee in the studio because we'll spill it.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
And
no liquid.
And our show, yeah, no liquid. And so we speak in a very unscripted manner. Our show is very informative. We give out valuable information. And we just chat about things that are going on. And so today is no different. We would like to thank our guests and our sponsors. We have two in-studio guests today. The first segment is going to be with my good friend right here sitting next to me on my left. Very good to know your left and right sometimes. Camille Hadley, and she is the executive director of Little Growers, Inc. right here in Palm Bay, Florida. Our second segment will be with Mr. Mel Chang for Indy Atlantic City Council, and he is sitting next to Camille. Hello, Mr. Chang, and welcome to our show.
Thank you. Appreciate
and
you
Mel,
having me here.
Thank you. And Camille, thank you for being here. So, Ellen, you know, I went to Canada over the summer, and I really fell in love with the community garden that we all took part of. And, of course, I've been trying to get Camille Hadley on this show, I guess, maybe 6 months or more. And we kept, you know, putting the date a different day and a different day because she's been so busy because, as you know, Little Growers addresses food insecurity. And they also address issues of environmental justice, as well as they collaborate with the community and other residents to make sure that people are not going through what we call food insecurity. And they help in so many ways by beautifying the neighborhoods, getting the children involved, and teaching people how to eat right. And when you eat right, you live right, right?
And it's just as much about that as it is leadership development. And understanding how to make things happen and how to create something like this in your own community to be able to sustain families, sustain an area, and certainly sustain the city.
Sustain life. And
that's
so
right.
I'm going to have our good friend Camille talk to our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and tell us how she got started in this, because her story coming all the way from California to Palm Bay and watching her baby grow, which is Little Growers Inc., is amazing. So take it away, Camille. Talk to us.
Thank you, Sita and Friends. Thank you for having me on your show today. So Little Growers, Inc., we really just have a mission of building this localized green economy. We want to see jobs created in our communities that are green jobs, that create opportunity for us to teach communities how to live healthy lifestyles and eat healthy but also take care of the environment in the process. So I'm really excited to be here to share with you all about our work today. And the way that we got started is actually, it was kind of for selfish reasons. My husband and I, we have four sons. We weren't even aware that we were living in a food desert when we moved back to Brevard County. And so when we moved back, we were like everybody in the community. We didn't have access to food. We didn't have a car, so we couldn't get to where the healthy food was. And we began to notice that our kids were behaving badly in school, that their grades were kind of starting to slip, and we just knew that food was the issue. So my husband and I started growing food in our front yard in pots. And from there, kids in the community started asking us what we were up to. So one night we were sitting in bed talking, and he said, we should teach the kids how to grow food. So that's kind of how Little Growers started. And
so it started in your yard?
It started in pots. In my front yard, in pots.
So for people who say, boy, I don't have the space, no excuses.
No excuses. Little Growers teach you can grow anywhere. Wherever you are, you can plant a seed.
So you believe the current food system we have in the United States and around the globe is damaging our planet.
Yeah, it's damaging our planet. It's causing food insecurity. And we try to design our gardens in a way that we have a moral compass. We call it permaculture design. So we don't call it that, but it's an idea that was created, and it's really about designing with a moral compass. So we consider how we think about how we create for abundance for all, but also how we take care of the planet in the process, and how we make sure that there is a fair share for every living creature, not just the people that we're trying to feed, but also the birds and the bees and the fish and the seas, everybody.
The entire food chain.
Right.
She can entire run food chain.
She's a multi-tasker. And one of the things that you and I, we were talking before the show started about our favorite movie. Mm-hmm. Say it the right way, because
the
I always...
The Littlest Big Farm.
Right. And if you have not seen that movie, it talks exactly to what Camille is talking about the be able to not kill things or not pesticides or not, but figure out how everything is supposed to work.
It's an ecosystem.
Within the environment. Exactly.
Yes.
And how the ecosystem works, which is what we're fighting for the lagoon, right?
Right. Right.
We're fighting for all of that. So you can only see how this is just going to make it that much better.
Right. So
what a great education.
So you're in Palm Bay and you recognize there was a need for fresh, nutritious food. Tell us about the consumers, the people in Palm Bay. How are they receiving Little Growers Inc? Because you've grown from the front yard to a lot more.
So yeah, the community has been really receptive. We've made quite a few partners within the community, local churches, businesses. We're working with Macedonia Community Development Board. We work with Club Esteem. That's actually where we moved from our front yard. We built our first actual garden at Lipscomb Street Park, and we started teaching kids at Club Esteem.
A lot of these churches have a lot of room where they could take out a few of those parking spaces and put a garden.
So I know that Macedonia is one of the churches that's growing. My church, Chief Cornerstone on Main Street in Melbourne, they're also looking to grow, and we're working with them as well to do that. We also work with, like, there's a new apartment complex, Heritage Park Apartments, low-income housing. So we built a raised bed garden for that community, and we meet with them every other week to teach them about growing and taking care of their garden. So we've had great opportunities to collaborate with the community that has really helped to expand our ability to provide this education.
I know Allie is going to jump in here. She's got a question. Of lately, we've been learning a lot of new words on our show. And one of the words we learned from one of the ladies that called in from Indiana was pandemonium. And I think today, Allie just learned a new word from you. What is that new word you learned?
The culture. Permaculture. So, I love the big new words.
Yeah. Tell us what that means, and how does that apply to Little Growers Inc?
So permaculture is just a green way of living or guiding systems of ethics. It's a way of designing using nature principles as a model, bending them as much as possible to create fertile, self-reliant, productive landscapes and communities. And it's designing within an ethical system. So when we think about permaculture design, we think about earth care, people care, and fair share, which is that abundance for everybody. And the way that Little Growers does that, because we primarily service in a community that has a great deal of flooding if there's a heavy rain, we try to design with those nature principles in mind to also mitigate that flooding. We also address issues of bioremediation. So our community is overwhelmed by toxins. We have a chemical plant, a brownfield site, a Superfund site, a waste transfer station, all within 1 mile of us, all causing damage to our soil and our watershed.
And the smell.
And the Indian River Lagoon suffers for it.
Oh, yes.
And when those species in that lagoon dies, people don't know this, but it has a huge impact on the health of the residents in the community. They are also getting sick, just like those fish in the lagoon. So what we try to do is design in a way that remediates those issues. It cleans the soil, it cleans the groundwater, but it also mitigates that water and stops it from entering the lagoon in the first place.
Well, that takes me to our next question. We always hear, when we turn on the news, we hear about environmental racism and we hear about environmental justice. And I think those two things goes hand in hand in what you were just saying about the communities in where you're planning some of these gardens, because usually people say don't treat citizens according to their zip codes, but we do see that a lot of times that oftentimes certain zip codes are treated better than the others.
It's always the people who contribute the least to environmental issues that receive the harshest impacts from them. So as I mentioned, we're a community that is encased environmental toxins. We're within 1 mile of all of these hazardous facilities, even the community.
And you know, we don't hear about that when the politicians are out on the campaign trail. Nobody actually speaks about what you just said about all the toxins that are in that neighborhood.
Well, just for one, the Port Malabar golf course that closed. There were a bunch of doctors that purchased that land, and they were going to make a building site. It was going to be apartments, complexes, blah, 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 blah. But when they went in there, they did a soil test and found out that there was so much arsenic that they couldn't build. And that started a little bit, because that's in the heart of the city.
People paying attention.
And people, and that whole Area 51 out in Palm Bay. Also, because the groundwater and the ground is so contaminated right now with pesticides and, again, that all of those bad things that we shouldn't be drinking and we shouldn't be eating certainly are out there as well. So it's not being talked about because there are big projects that probably need to be taken care of before they're able to do that.
Well, I'm happy to share that I worked with the East Central Florida Regional Planning Council's brownfield assessment, and I was able to get them to come out and do an assessment in Palm Bay and Melbourne. We presented the Melbourne assessment at our first environmental justice forum that we had in May of this year, and then we'll be presenting the Palm Bay assessment at our next one on October 29th at the Evans Center.
How many pages long are they?
They're pretty long, but we don't try to speak science to the community.
Yeah, we
have to meet them where they are.
Well,
right?
It's common sense, right?
Right.
You are what you eat, sleep, and breathe.
Right.
That's exactly. It's as simple as that.
And keep in mind, a lot of these solutions are not, you know, we're used to quick fix. You know, take a pill, it's supposed to fix it, right? Do this, it's supposed to fix it. These are not quick fix things.
No.
Like our favorite movie, that took 7 years to redo, and it's constant attention and constant
education,
exactly.
So for listeners who are tuning in, we just want to let you guys know we're speaking with Camille Hadley, and she's the executive director of Little Growers, Inc. right here in Palm Bay, Florida. We're speaking with her about we're addressing food insecurity, environmental justice, and learning a little bit about the permaculture and watching it through her lens and how she's teaching us here what they're doing in Palm Bay. So what exactly is your definition of a community garden? Because when somebody says community, you get the feel that we're one. We're one village. We're one people. We care about everybody, right? So your definition?
So I would define it as an environment that creates community. Right? but also creates opportunity for food justice and food sovereignty. So it's easy to say that we're going to have food justice, right? That means that you have access to food. But for me, food justice means more than that. It means that we have control over that access. We know where that food is coming from. We know that it's really organic and not just something that got a sticker that said organic and wasn't necessarily regulated to be. So I think that it's important to understand those definitions when you talk about what it means for us to be building these community gardens and creating opportunities to address food.
Right. And it's about education too, right? Because oftentimes a mom is working, a dad is working, or maybe a single parent, grandparents, whoever. And it's so easy to drive up to McDonald's or Burger King and just buy one of the cheap burgers that, God forbid, if they didn't put all that condiments on it, it would taste like crap. And
Square fish.
And so people don't understand, by just chopping up an onion, fresh garlic, a little pepper, bringing it to a quick fry in a tiny bit of oil, and throw your vegetables in with a little salt and pepper, it's just as healthy on a piece of bread.
Right.
So it's all about education. So how do you get people to move away from fast food and move away from saying, well, it's too expensive to buy fresh vegetables, it's too expensive to eat healthy? Because really and truly, it's not.
Right. It can be, depending on how you go about it. But if you're growing food, so the way that we do it is we start with the kids, because we find that the kids go home and they teach the parents. And I always tell people that I don't teach kids to grow food. I teach them to design solutions to the problems that their communities are facing.
Yeah, so, that means a lot.
So when we start with the kids and they get excited when they pull that out the ground. Sometimes they make fun of me because they'll say, oh, Miss Camille, you just pulled that carrot up and bit it. It's all dirty. I'm like, no, the dirt is good, too. You know, the worms eat the dirt. You can eat the dirt. We okay. It's a vegetable, you know. It's healthy for them. It's healthy for you. It's healthy for all us, right? So they get excited when they can grow it and pull it out the ground, and they're excited to come back, because I always make them, the rule is they can't take what they're not going to eat. And if they take it, they have to then come back and tell me how they prepared it.
Right. So don't waste.
So we don't waste. We don't waste. So, when they take the food, they come back, they tell us what they cooked, they're excited about it. It makes the parents excited, because they're getting excited about eating healthy.
And it's also mentally, it's good for you to watch your own produce flower and grow, and then you chop it or you pick it or whatever, and then you go home and saute it and cook it and whatever. Do you find that a lot of people are using the community gardens too as a form of relaxation and mental therapy?
I try to teach people, like, especially our volunteers that have elder parents that are dealing with issues of Alzheimer's and dementia and stuff like that. I try to teach them that do you know how many your endorphins increase and how healthy it is just to stick your hand in the dirt? Like, it really provides health benefits.
Yeah.
So I teach them that not only does that increase your mental health capacity, but it also creates those opportunities for you to have those increased endorphins and have that experience of remembering to do these things, remembering to provide care to your plants. And it's really an overall
health. It's like
experience.
The love of the land, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there is, I have to add this. Ever since I started my container garden on my patio,
balcony,
which is not very big, but nonetheless, going out there and being able to make a salad I haven't thrown away one bag of salad.
Yeah, because it's your own.
You know, exactly.
Something about
you. You know, those salad things, you go,
yeah.
You know, skinny me goes to the store,
right,
and I
right.
pick out all the salad stuff, and then it rots in my refrigerator.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I
yeah.
Away.
When
it never happens now with the container garden, because I go out and I pick it and I do it at the time, and we make the salad that night and eat it that night.
Yeah.
So it stays on the vine or stays in the in the counter.
So
for
you
the
feel
same
you feel like it's yours. So, Camille, tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, do you have any events coming up where people could come and meet you and hear about the community garden and what you guys are doing?
Yeah. We have our Make a Green Noise Designing Solutions Environmental Justice Forum. That's going to be taking place on October 29th. That's a Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. We'll be serving a light breakfast and box lunch that day. So if you come, you'll get to eat with us and talk with us and learn about environmental issues that are impacting our community and the way that we're designing solutions around that as a community together. So that's one thing. And at that event, we'll actually be designing our food entrepreneurship and climate resiliency plan with the East Central Florida Regional Planning Council. So we're excited about that. And then, of course, we have our fourth annual Harvest Yam Festival. That's on Halloween.
Yam and fish. Curry, fish, and yam. Have you had that?
We have food trucks coming up, but my mom makes curry. She makes a great chicken curry, by the way.
Yeah, curry chicken. You guys say chicken curry. We say curry chicken. The Guyanese versus Trini. Yeah.
It's still like crack, though. I'm telling you. It's like magic stuff. I don't know what's in that curry, but it brings people together.
What kind of yam is it? Is it cassava or is it the yam?
Like a sweet potato.
Okay. So, I know what it is.
So we give away sweet potatoes at that event. They come from local organic farmers here. But we also have lots of vendors. When is this event? It's on Halloween. So it's October 31st. Mm-hmm. It's from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Chief Cornerstone Missionary Baptist Church. That's at 3125 Main Street in Melbourne. So if you are not doing anything on Halloween or if you want a safe place to take your kids trick-or-treating, come and visit us at the Yam Festival.
Sounds like fun.
I'm going to make time to come. And it's free.
So I'm sure all people who are tuning into our show are asking themselves questions like, tell us like some of the benefits, the importance and well-being of a community garden. I'm sure there are things that you know besides beautifying the community, besides educating the community. What else happens when you have a community garden?
I mean, if you live in a community that experience crime, it reduces crime. It,
I never thought of that.
It totally removes it from the community. And there are many studies that show that where communities have built gardens and they've totally eliminated issues of crime in their community. So that's one thing that we're really excited about. And for us specifically, it mitigates stormwater. We have huge issues of flooding that occurs in our community. We want to protect the Indian River Lagoon. It's our watershed. There are so many species living in that watershed that need our care and protection. And by mitigating stormwater that's entering that watershed, we're providing that protection and that care for those species in the lagoon. So we're excited about that as an opportunity for community gardens in our neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, and sometimes you drive through certain neighborhoods and you would see people take like a brick. And they put dirt into the little holes, and they'll have tomatoes sprouting up.
Yeah.
And I heard you were saying something about tomatoes, because sometimes those tomatoes are growing. I mean, we went to the flea market last week, mm-hmm. and a lady was selling eggplant for $1 each. She was selling tomatoes, 50 cents for a huge tomato. It was not expensive. But $10, we came home with a big basket full of goodies, right? But talk to us about the tomatoes, because I heard you were saying something about tomatoes.
I hope you replanted your seeds, too.
So, you know what? I did, and I ate them all up. But my husband has tomatoes in his garden.
I was going to say, I got that exactly right.
Yeah. So. And I replant everything. And there's another cool thing, too. I don't mean to interrupt you. Mm-hmm. But bananas. If you take the banana peels and you put them in water, the water that you use with the bananas, for some reason, with the potassium or something, it makes everything, like, cute. It's like Miracle-Gro.
Really?
It's amazing.
I'll have to try that.
Yeah.
So the tomatoes, you said it needs a lot of space?
How much time does she have? Do we have, like, a whole other show we can hang around for a little while?
Yeah. Everything needs space, right? You need space to grow. You can't grow.
Please, I want to shrink.
You can't grow in a little bitty box. So when you give your plants more room, I would say 6 to 8 feet of depth if you want to produce a good amount of food. Like, if you're looking to feed your family, you need 6 to 8 feet of depth to be able to produce a good amount of food for your family. And they want to stretch. Plants want to stretch. And people think, oh, well, I just have to water them. No, you need food. They need food, too. So you have to recycle, reduce, reuse. That's that planet care that we talked about in permaculture. You want to reuse your food waste. Put it away, mix it with some brown matter, some leaves that are dropping
organic,
in your
garden. Yeah, unorganic.
You've got compost.
Right.
I have chickens, and they make great compost.
Right. So basically, the things that we grow the most is like tomatoes, eggplant, pepper, you know, maybe scorpion peppers, habaneros, peas. I have garden pigeon peas, and then yams. What else are you guys growing? Cucumbers, melons, fruits?
Cucumbers, pineapples, bananas. Wow.
And there's so many different kinds of bananas. We could do a whole show on that. So give us, we have 3 minutes left. Give us the website, and then give us a success story of someone that came by the community garden and had no idea what it was about and how they left, that feeling.
So I want to talk about the Heritage Park Apartments. They are a low-income housing development in Melbourne. This is a community of people that are formerly homeless individuals, but we built a raised bed garden on their back patio, and it has given them such pride. Like, when we initially started talking to them about this garden, they were like, well, people are going to steal the vegetables and they're going to destroy the boxes. And I was like, no, you guys will see that they will take care of it and they will want to give to it. And as the garden began to grow, that is what happened. And they were so proud. This club that I deal with at Heritage Park was so proud of the work that they were doing there that they came back to me like, Camille, this, just crying, like, we're so proud of this. Look, the people in this community are proud of this. They bring seeds to us. They talk about how beautiful it is. So that, I think, is just the ultimate success story. When you can show them that when you care about something, other people care too.
Yeah. But how
they will
cool
invest in it as
that,
well.
How that mentality changed, right?
It totally
people
changed.
Are going to steal from me, you know, and all pent up and excited and maybe negative emotion, right, to something totally
positive,
beautiful.
Totally positive.
They were there.
And so give us a website, Camille, if somebody wanted to volunteer or if somebody wanted to be a partner with you, because I know you have a lot of business partners as well.
Yes, we work with a lot of different organizations, and national and local. But if you want to find us, we are at littlegrowersinc.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. And the teens, I think, are working on a TikTok as well. So soon we'll be on TikTok.
Yeah. Amazing. You're doing amazing work. And
Thank you. We're
so proud of you. Now, and you said that we've got a couple seconds left. You've got your 4 children involved in this as well, and it's keeping them busy. Tell our listeners and Viewpoint with CETA and Friends how it changed the children's lives and their grades too.
So my kids are really proud of it, and they get really good grades. The one that's most involved is my middle son, Amir. He actually sits on the executive board, so he's an advisor on the executive board. He took the permaculture course that we taught last year, so he's also actually helping me teach the younger kids. So when we do classes, he teaches in those classes as well, but he's a straight-A student, all advanced courses. My youngest, he's doing really well, all A's. All my kids do good. They're healthy eaters, and it helps their brains to function well.
We'll let Allie jump in here for 20 seconds. Anything to add, Allie?
My father was from a family of farmers, but we lived in West Palm Beach in a just a little neighborhood. He turned that entire backyard into something really special, and I have fond memories of doing all kinds of farming kind of things with him and the food we brought in, and how proud it makes the child to say, I did this, and then be able to participate in eating it. It's wonderful.
Well, you
I
know,
say grow food, not grass.
Oh, I know. Well, you know,
that's
I'm
right.
from the islands, and I have to say, when we got home from school, we had a routine where you take off your uniforms, put on an old dress, and go in the garden, help dig yams, pick peas, bring in the tomatoes, the bodhi, the beans, whatever.
It's responsibility.
And yeah, it was responsibility. Yeah. And then we ate what we grew. But I was so jealous of the people that would go to a grocery store and come back with packaged goodies. I'd be like, I want to go to America and buy a box of cereal. We're so poor. And now that I've grown up and I've seen the difference, I'm like, you know what? I'd like to go back to the village sometime, please.
Yeah.
Because all that sugar and salt and additives that they put in these packages in the grocery store and charge you, it doesn't compare to a fresh piece of roti or pita bread and some beans. It really doesn't. So you are what you eat, sleep, and breathe, right?
Right.
So website one more time, and then we'll go to commercial break.
littlegrowersinc.org.
Woo.
So excited to have you on the show, and what an inspiration for today. But we are going to take a quick break and listen to the messages from our sponsors, and we'll be right back after these messages with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and Mel Chang.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency room. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. Just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And boy, what a robust first segment we had. Just talking about sweet potatoes and yam and community gardens and who started it and why and the benefits. Camille Headley was wonderful, Ellen.
Yeah, and I'm so excited to get involved. Wait, if there's somebody special out there listening right now, I know. Well, you wait. We're taking a road trip, buddy.
Yeah.
We're on our way for a road trip.
And so we are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and all over the planet on WWBC. And Ellen, our second segment is with Mr. Chang, Mel Chang. And he liked us so much when he called in a few weeks ago that he decided to come in person and be part of our show. And this segment is being...
This segment is being paid for, actually, by the campaign to elect Mel Chang to City Council of Indian-Atlantic.
He's
C4, correct?
Yes. Hello. Welcome, Mr. Chang, and you're so relaxed, and we're glad that you're here, and you decided to put your hat in the ring and run for City Council. So give our listeners a little information on your background. We know from speaking with you, you're a veteran. You were also a venture capitalist, and you did a lot of stuff. So talk to us.
Well, thank you. Part of my reason for running is exactly what Camille's doing, is trying to bring the community together on a different level. But I do love her program, and there's a lot of positivity for it, especially what hit, what piqued my interest was the mitigating flood in the swales or in the ponds that the city currently has, and making that more beautiful, as well as making it a place for food. Right now, it's just an open field with no food in it. And I think what her program, we could probably do a lot better as a community, using all her touch points to make that happen.
Yeah,
indeed.
So what is your background? You tell us a little bit, give us a little of your history. Of course, you're retired now, obviously, I would think, and you just decided that you had some extra time to give. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. Let them get to know Mr. Mel Chang.
My background is 21 years in special operations, mostly supporting special forces of the United States as well as other countries in tracking terrorists, drug dealers, human trafficking, counter-narcotics across the globe, and providing presidential security as well as security for other dignitaries visiting the United States.
Mr. Mel, we should make a movie about you.
I
could just see him in a suit and tie getting off a plane.
No.
Helping and
I'm sitting next to him.
Yeah. You'll be in the movie too.
Very fast hands, I suppose.
Yeah. So why run for city council and why now?
I think we had talked about it earlier during the break, even before the show, that there's a disparity that I see between the government, not only at the local level, but at the national level, as well as the international level. As Camille was talking about, one community, and I feel us being divided, more of a us against them, or we're blue, they're red, whatever the genre is for that separation. And I think we just need to go the other way as a nation and come back together for a common goal. And that's for the people, the blessings of the people, to have security in faith in the government to protect them and to provide for them.
Yes. Well, that's one of the things that she did touch on, was not just environmental justice and social justice and food insecurity, but bringing people together. And one of the issues that most people running for office have right now is there's so much hate and division and fear that when someone is running for office, you really have to pay attention to what they're saying. I mean, it's like, we are all on the planet, we're all God's children. Doesn't matter where we come from, or it doesn't matter what we look like, but at the end of the day, we all want the same thing: food, air, and water. We want to survive. And so you decided to run for city council because, were you seeing something that you could change in the Atlantic?
Yes, I believe there's a myriad of changes that have to occur there in the Atlantic. And it starts off with the leadership, the community. Everybody looks to leadership to give them guidance, whether it's a small organization, a school teacher, a preacher, a council member, a congressman, the president. It goes all the way up that high. And you look at that leadership and you feed off of it as a person, and then it leads into other people, and then you have a group of people that think, well, this guy's good, we'll follow his lead. However, if that lead goes in awry, then you have to restart, what I call a culture restart, where there is government transparency, there is accountability, there is responsibility by those serving in public office, accountable to the people. That's where we need to start, in my opinion, where we're at in Indianapolis, is a reset.
And what exactly is the role of a person who is elected to city council?
As with all elected officials, my position is they should be able to represent the people, not just a certain group of people, but everybody, and take in information, criticisms, positive and negatives from everybody, collate all that, analyze it, and then come up with a solution for the greater good of the people.
Yeah, and you know, oftentimes people talk about affordable housing in the cities. Are you seeing anything in Indy Atlantic that tells you, Mr. Chang, that there's something needs to be done about the housing issues in Indy Atlantic?
Currently, because Indy Atlantic is roughly 1 square mile, so we only have so much dirt to build on and use. With that model that you're talking about, it really doesn't affect us that much.
Because it's land space.
Correct.
Yes.
There's only X amount of footage. Where here's on the mainland side of the water, you can grow out to the west and you have a lot more land. On the beach side, you've got the Indian Atlantic, Atlantic Ocean and the Indian River, and then that's it.
And if you could change one thing in the Atlantic, what would it be?
As I alluded to earlier, it's the culture. I believe, as I said earlier, we need to have a more robust culture where everybody is inclusive of an opinion without being ostracized, without being segregated as, well, we don't love your opinion, so we're going to discount it. I think everybody's opinion counts.
Yeah, and you know, when we spoke to you last time, you had told us about your priorities, Mr. Mel Chang, who is running for city council. You said it was public safety, fiscal responsibility and accountability, growth, stabilization, and infrastructure. So we know we can build a lot, but do you see a need for infrastructure to be addressed? Are there buildings or maybe homes or commercial space that needs rehabbing or expanding? What do you mean when you say infrastructure?
Infrastructure, as I was talking about earlier, as Camille pointed out, was in our case is the flooding issue and cleaning the water, the storm water, before it enters the lagoon. We do have pools set aside. We have do have swells that do collect the rainwater from storm waters. However, I think with her model and using the plants that actually, you know, can be used for other areas, to use that model to cleanse the water is probably be a little bit better, a little faster. And not only that, but people get something back from that application versus just a field that's open,
yeah,
that's filled with water.
Yeah, speaking about flooding, we all saw what happened with the hurricane we just had when it comes to insurance. What is the situation on the beach now with homeowners insurance and the floods? And I mean, I know when I lived in Tortoise Island, it was pretty expensive. So have you done any research on that?
That's funny. My neighbors just commented that their insurance went up 100%, some 120%. So it's gone from roughly 2,000 to 4,000 overnight. And a lot of people are cringing about why it's gone up and changing insurance companies.
Good luck.
To bring that back down to normalcy for living on the beach.
Yeah, that's awful. I mean, people are getting these mortgages, and now you won't be able to get a mortgage for a home if you can't get insurance.
Right.
Right? It's crazy.
Well, and part of it is, too, is that so many people purchased homes just before all these insurance hikes and the tax hikes went up. And so their mortgage, which may have been $1,000 before, is now more like $1,500 because of the increase. And now we're back in the situation that people can't afford where they're living.
Well,
again, you know, here
right.
we go back again because of taxes and because of insurance specifically. And those are regulatable, you know, arguably regulatable. And that's what city council, you know,
right.
members have a
right.
have an opportunity to do something about.
Well, look at the policemen,
areas.
The teachers, the people who are working in the schools and in the Atlantic. They probably can't even live there.
Yeah,
everybody lives mainland,
right, right.
you know.
They don't live where they work.
That is true. Yeah, that is
I mean,
true.
They all come from out west.
I believe most of our police force and fire force live outside the city limits.
Yes, yeah. Because of the
affordability.
The cost.
Right.
Affordability.
So, Mr. Chang, do you feel, you know, we've all watched, you know, some of the city council meetings, and some of them get a little bit feisty at times with the residents who want to have a say in every issue. Do you think the residents should have a say on every single issue, and how would you encourage more people to get involved?
I've used a, we were talking about earlier about coffee. So my program that I've used before, I call it Cup of Joe, and it's worked successfully across a number of platforms. And what we do is we meet a couple times a month, meet business people, residents, teachers, whoever wants to come. And we have just what we're doing here, a normal conversation and talk about issues. Not necessarily talking about solutions, but the issues.
Yeah, so who's we?
We, as before, as I said, I used to have my friends, businessmen. We used to meet together and collectively come up with, let's say, issues with the road structure.
Right.
And
so, but is it the community that you're speaking to, too, or just
sometimes we would friends, yeah, colleagues, work friends, business owners would come together, companies that we partner with in hub zones. I don't know if there's any here in the Atlantic, but we partner with hub zones and try and get the benefits for that company to grow smartly. But we meet, like I said, we meet a couple times a month. We talk about the issues, and somebody would share something, and we would take it to somebody at the council or a chief of staff somewhere. If it's at the national level, a congressman, we take it to his chief of staff, and we talk about, hey, you know, this is what we see as a community or as a group of people within the community. We like to see this, you know, being addressed. Not necessarily provide solutions, but this is an issue.
Yeah, so you see something that needs to be done and you address it.
Correct.
So that leads me to our next question. You know, a lot of people who run for office, we see them doing photo ops. We see them on social media, and, you know, they promise a lot of stuff, and a lot of them just, they don't deliver because it's like a power struggle.
Correct.
It's like power struggle and control. But you've done work as a veteran, and you served, and we thank you for that. But what other things have you done to improve diversity, equity, and inclusion in Indy Atlantic?
In Indy Atlantic, I've only been there for 3 years, and my time is valuable. Most of my work has not been directly in Indy Atlantic for a number of reasons. Most of my work as far as a humanitarian or enabled humanitarian, I should say, engaged humanitarian, is outside of Indy Atlantic, where I'm doing more work with abused children, sea life, wounded warriors, those type of things that are bigger picture. In Indy Atlantic, as I said, we're only 1 square mile, so we're sort of limited on what programs are in Indy Atlantic for citizens. But I think the bigger picture is the community at large, whether it's Beachside or the greater Melbourne area, and looking at that bigger picture, and we're just a small piece of that, and what's our contribution to that bigger piece.
Yeah, because I mean, the city council members, you guys play a big role in ensuring that the city is run efficiently and smoothly, and a lot of transparency as well. Do you feel like right now there is not enough transparency and accountability with the members of the Indy Atlantic City Council?
I believe that to be the case. Not only do I believe that to be the case, there are many residents within Indy Atlantic that have asked me to run and to try and figure out what is going on within the structure of the government. I think it's a shame that when a citizen comes to a town meeting, you have 3 minutes to talk.
Yeah.
And when a council member interrupts your 3 minutes with things to shut you down or things to silence you, I think that is egregious.
I think that goes back to certain people run for office, and once they get there, it's about power.
It is.
And it's about controlling the masses.
It is.
But how do we stop that? Because people should not run for office because they want to be powerful. They should run for office because they want to improve the lives of the people that live in their community.
That is correct. That is 100% correct. And I believe for our little community, our little town, as I said, it's a culture reset to get the people that are in power, that are in control, more attuned to what's going on around them, and less attuned to their friends.
Yes. Yeah, they seem to be indebted to different people.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So what would you say are some of the most important qualities that a city council member should have?
Here's a couple things I wrote down, and you can actually go to my Facebook page. Here's a couple things that I do differently. I take ownership of my behaviors and actions. I live by the same standards everybody else does. I'm not better. I'm not worse. I am the same. I'm not afraid to stand up for what's right. If I give you my word, it's my bond. I give credit where credit's due. If somebody came up with a better idea than I did, they get the credit. Not me as a council member. I'm not going to use that in my next campaign to say, so-and-so did this, but I'm taking credit for it. That's egregious. And I believe in transparency. I believe everybody in our city should be able to have transparency with the government. If you can't trust the government, I think our country's going in the wrong direction.
Here, here, right?
Amen.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mr. Mel Chang, and he is running for a seat on the Indy Atlantic City Council right here in Brevard, and it's seat number four, right?
Yes, it is.
So how would you go about representing the interest of your of the people in your district?
First, I'd like to start out with a blank sheet. Go in and find out ground truth. Without ground truth, you're just building upon false platforms. So one is to find out where the money's going and who's getting paid and how is it being dished out. For example, we say we're going to do open bids, but lately the same companies have been getting the same contracts over and over and over without a rebid. I'm of the opinion that everybody, every business out there should be able to put a bid in for whatever it is Indy Atlantic is putting out for bid. Number two is we go to a requirements-based system, meaning there's a requirement for something, and we build the solicitation around that service or product, not because my friend does this for a living that we want to go in.
And nobody holds them accountable for that? I mean, you would think it should be open bids.
You would think so.
Right? And you would think that may the best man for the job get the job. So this is the thing about politics. It's like a lot of cronyism. And it doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on. I see you're shaking your head, Allie. You've been around longer than me, right?
And thank you very much.
And you've seen that, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's like, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it was like, well, this is the way we've always done it. Well, then, and then you, if this is the way we always done it and our constituents are complaining, maybe we should do something different.
I agree. You know?
So right.
So who are you running against?
My opponent is Lauren Strand.
Okay.
And if elected to the Indy Atlantic City Council's Group 4, what are your three top priorities?
My three top priorities is, one, the culture reset. Mm-hmm. Transparency, accountability, responsibility. Two would be the budget, building a financial or fiscal policy that supports our growth. And three would be the growth control and infrastructure.
And how do you propose to increase communication between the city officials and the public? Because that seems to be a problem, not just in Indy Atlantic, but in Melbourne, in Cocoa, in Cape Canaveral, in the state of Florida. We watch elected officials rant on their Facebook pages and call people names. And then people go back and re-elect these people all over again. But yet still in their homes, they want to teach their children how to be kind and how to be nice. Well, some do anyways. But in the open, when you're running for office, you're lying and cheating and scheming, and it shouldn't be that way, should it?
It should not be that way, and I believe it goes back to character and integrity. One of the best quotes I've heard is, the character and your integrity are defined by your actions, not the other way around.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it should be that if you run for office, you should sit down and figure out why you're running. What are the real reasons you're running? If it's for power and control, you shouldn't be running for office, right?
Right.
So, Mr. Mel, we have 3 minutes left. How do you handle criticism? Because a lot of people, when they're criticized, it's tough. How would you handle something like that?
It is tough. For me, being a veteran of the special operations community, I have a natural tendency to fight fire with fire.
Yes.
And now that I've moved from a battle-worn lifetime into a more subdued lifetime, I would say, the next chapter of my life.
Collaborative.
I need to adjust my thinking a little bit and be a little bit more open to kindler things.
In life. Yeah.
It's very difficult when somebody attacks you to just sit there and not do anything. And then when you do something, you write to the council, you write to the police, and nothing gets done. There's an issue. That's a systemic issue beyond just your complaining. And if it's more than 5 residents, there's definitely a systemic issue that needs to get solved.
You know, sometimes people's words don't match their actions. And I must say, we do need a kinder, gentler, more mindful world and USA as well.
Yeah.
So Mr. Mel Chang, he's giving me the heads up. We've got a minute, you said, miss? So give us your website one more time if somebody wanted to find you at an event, volunteer, donate to the campaign, and vote for you. Tomorrow is the last day to register to vote, and people can vote by mail. They can vote early vote. They can vote in person. But you can't complain if you don't register to vote and be part of the solution, right?
Exactly.
Give
that
us
is
your website.
Correct.
Yes.
My website is melvinchangcampaign.com, or you can find me on Facebook at Chang for Change. And you did hit it on the head when you did say the only way to change something is to be engaged. And therefore, I'm in the race.
And we're proud of you. It doesn't matter if someone is registered as a Republican, a Democrat, independent. As long as your heart's in the right place to help the people that you say you're going to help and provide education and opportunities for everybody, we welcome you on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
You're here.
Mr. Mel Chang, and I'm grateful that your children are supporting you, and I'm grateful that you served our country, and we wish you well.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Well, once again, another fantastic show here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are here each and every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC. Please tune in, or you can catch our archive shows on SitaMediaInc.com. Hey, we'll see you next week.